if we grew up with emotionally immature parents and we've been taught that our needs need to come last, that we earn love, we come into adulthood and it really fucks with our ability to be in healthy relationships. And so I've gone through this work myself. It's really interesting. I divorced and a year and a half later took this cuddle training just because it was available and thought, I'm a mom, I can cuddle. And the cuddle training that I took was through Cuddlist. And it's really about empowering clients and learning about boundaries and how to communicate effectively, and is really built kind of in the background of something called the Wheel of Consent. And so while I was practicing holding space for clients, I was practicing the skill set that I did not come out of my childhood development with. And I certainly didn't come out of a really unhealthy marriage with.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. All right, you guys, we are back on the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast today with my friend, Michelle Renee. I'm so excited. I recently met you. You also live here in San Diego, and I met you through another friend. It was actually the craziest story. I had met this woman on a Facebook group advertising renting out a room at my house, and it was sex positive. And we met up, had a beautiful little afternoon, and they were like, oh, you should meet my friend, Michelle. And she was like, oh, you guys have to meet, you'll hit it off. And so we met, and it's been amazing. And Michelle, I asked you to join the podcast today to talk about surrogate partnership. This is something that you have experience with, and I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit about like what you do and what is surrogate partnership?
Yeah. So surrogate partner therapy is a modality that works with talk therapists. So if they have a client, generally single client who's been in therapy for a long time, they've established a good relationship between the therapist and the client so that they've hit a wall of some sort. Talk therapy just doesn't seem to be enough. And there is something blocking the client from moving forward in emotional or physical intimacy. So sometimes the therapist knows about surrogate partner therapy and they say, hey, I have this idea. You could start to work with a surrogate partner in addition to talk therapy. Or a lot of times the client is out there Googling and they come across surrogate partner therapy and they take it to their therapist and they say, hey, I'm curious about this. Do you know anything? And the thing is most therapists have never heard of it because it's not taught in school. So we come in and work with the therapist and the client separately. Like the therapist is not in the room with us, but we all talk to each other. We call it the triadic model. So the therapist meets with the client meets with me, I meet with the therapist. So I report back. This is what I noticed happened in session today. The client talks to the therapist and the therapist says, what happened in session today? And we kind of look to see how those two things are the same and how they're different because I get to touch clients. So I'm like the neck down person where the talk therapist is like the neck up person. And so I build a relationship with the client. The first phase of that looks like establishing mutual ideas around communication and how can we like build a layer of understanding between us so that there's safety. And then we start to explore touch and we start to explore sensual touch and we explore body image and we can explore erotic touch if that's deemed therapeutically appropriate for the client. So that's like the quick overpass of what surrogate partner therapy is. I happen to be a surrogate partner, but I also happen to be a professional cuddler and I kind of do everything in the middle. So I call myself an intimacy guide that works all the way between platonic and erotic, the entire spectrum.
So with surrogate partnership, do you have to have a therapist also in conjunction with that?
Amongst me and my colleagues, we have a kind of agreed upon rule amongst us that we will not call it surrogate partner therapy if a therapist is not involved in the process. The thing about surrogate partner therapy is it is absolutely legal. And people will say, how is it legal if there could be erotic contact? And it is because there is a therapist overseeing the work. It's determined that it's therapeutically relevant. And it's not an exchange of money for services. It's just part of the process, the modality. As if we deem that all three of us agree that this is something that is beneficial and that we're all a yes to, it's an option. It doesn't mean that it has to go there, and it certainly isn't a guarantee that it's going to go there. That's the difference between like a prostitution law, right? Where you have, I would like to have a blowjob. Great. Here is $200. Do the thing for me, right? Yeah. That does not happen in surrogate partner therapy. It might be one day we're working on how to encourage you to ask for what you want. Mm. Another day we might be going over the basics of oral sex, right? It could be any of those. It can be a wide range of work, and it's the price is not based on what is happening in session that day.
I feel like surrogate partnership could be a really good way to help create like a secure attachment.
Absolutely.
Mm.
As can cuddling. Like this is, I think this is what I want to kind of demystify a bit. So I started in cuddling and I added surrogate partner therapy to my like toolbox. I was like 3 years into cuddling at that point. And people think professional cuddling, that's such a cute thing. But when I think of it, it's more so an opportunity to share space with another human being in a platonic intimacy way. And so the difference between those two modalities comes down to boundaries and maybe like structure. But ultimately, it's about figuring out how to be in space with another human being in a mutual way. So if somebody shows up for a cuddle session, I don't come in with a toolbox of diagnostic exercises. I come in and I say, okay, we agree that we're not going to do anything that we're uncomfortable with. Like, I'm not going to do anything I'm uncomfortable with. You're not going to do anything you're uncomfortable with. And I'm only going to say yes to things that I'm a wholehearted yes to. How would you like to connect today? And that might look like cuddling, but it might look like sitting next to each other and sharing conversation or eye gazing or just practicing being in space with someone who has their whole attention on you and who is there to attune with you. And I see that as a way to really establish secure attachment. The same thing with surrogate partner therapy. It's just that we have more options on the table. And usually the client has a more intense background because they've really cut themselves off from pursuing physical and emotional intimacy. It doesn't have to be sexual intimacy. It might be they've really isolated themselves. And the difference is that we're working with a therapist and having a wider range available. But a lot of times it's like, it's bigger trauma stuff that shows up for surrogate partner therapy than somebody that just walks in and says, I'd like to experience closeness, no matter what your gender is, no matter what your orientation is. You can meet with another human full-fledged being with a nervous system and have some co-regulation happen. Right? Without having to do like, okay, today's exercise is going to be, we're going to learn how to touch objects. You know, it's just less structured.
I feel like so many people don't learn how to maybe relate to other people. And is there a lot of like learning that happens through professional cuddling and even through surrogate partnership?
So the way that I practice is I like to be really meta with clients. So I think part of the laboratory of it is that I try to let them know what's happening for me and what my experience is, because we don't get that in the usual world, at least not very often. Any chance you've read the book, What My Bones Know?
No.
Oh my goodness. It's a trauma memoir and it's so good. And at the very end of the book, I think it's done in like phases, like the third section of the book, the author of the book, she ends up working with a psychologist, I believe. I might be wrong. But he says, I want to work with you, once he heard what her trauma background was. And she had been on this journey to try to help heal from some of her childhood. And they accidentally fall into this system where he offers her that she could record their sessions because she's an author and that she might want to use it someday in a publication and that it's hers. That he's like, I have no ownership of this recording, but please do what you want with it. So she sends it off to have it transcribed and then sends him a copy. And he starts going through and commenting on it of what he was experiencing himself during these certain portions of their therapy session. And I thought, oh my God, I do that in real time because I feel like there's something so beneficial to know what my experience is and what I'm thinking about so that you can kind of match that up with what is happening in your body and in your head And so it was kind of a wonderful accident to read that book and go, oh my gosh, I'm kind of doing something like that, just in a real-time way rather than coming back and going through notes later.
Hmm. I feel like that'd be so fascinating to be able to understand somebody else's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, like, you don't know what's going through somebody else's head or what is literally happening in their physical body. You are making assumptions mm-hmm. 90% of the time about what you think or assume is happening. And that can also get you in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, it can. I remember I went to Sex Geek Summer Camp in 2015, which is like a summer camp for sex educators. And this was before I got into any of this work. I was like, I knew I wanted to do something with sex ed and I didn't know what. And I got the opportunity to go to this camp and I thought, I'll meet someone who's doing something that I resonate with and I will figure out who I want to be like, right? I didn't come away with any of those answers. But the man that ran the camp, Reed Mahalko, one of his lessons in the camp was a lot of teaching you how to facilitate, how to stand in front of groups of people. And one of the things that he modeled was talking about, like he called them the hamsters in his head. And he would just stop whatever he was presenting on. And he would say, right now, the hamsters in my head are telling me that you are all bored and you don't want to be here and I have nothing to offer you. And by saying that out loud, I stopped feeding the hamsters. And I think there's a lesson there about the power of vulnerability. And now you've just taken all the people in your audience and they have a different feeling about you because you're real. You're not just some statue standing in front that is perfection. And I took that home with me then in 2015 before I did even my cuddling training. And I put that into play in my relationships. And I started to make kind of a rule of sharing what I was afraid of with my partners. And so fast forward, and I find myself doing that with clients because it's like, it's the olive branch, the offering of, let me give you my vulnerability so that you feel like you can start to give me yours. Because I think that is the most powerful way to build connection. And so that's a lot of that meta communication for me is about offering up my vulnerability, saying, stopping a session and saying, hey, could I share with you what I'm noticing right now? Like a thought that keeps popping in my head. I'm noticing that I have this fear coming up that you're not attracted to me. And like just bringing that into the space and normalizing it, that we can have difficult conversations and it doesn't have to end our connection. In fact, it will probably make it stronger.
That is such an important thing to take away, is that you really can have hard conversations. And most of the time, it does strengthen your relationships more than anything. Who really benefits or should consider looking at either a professional cuddler or surrogate partnership?
Yeah. So with surrogate partner therapy, I think that the level of training for our practitioners, it's definitely deeper than if you look at professional cuddling as a whole. So if you've got a trauma background and you're single for the most part, if you're looking to work on building like sexual intimacy, that's really important to keep the clients primarily single. I say primarily because there's the few exceptions of a client that's in an already established open relationship where non-monogamy is not going to create a big rupture or potential rupture in the relationship. That's the one exception to like the single rule, is that we're building a relationship and you're going to go through big feelings. It's just part of the work. And if you were already in a relationship, that would be really jarring or could be really jarring. So if you're single and you're wanting to work on your abilities to be in sexual relationships, surrogate partner therapy, great option. Now, to be fair, not every surrogate has the boundaries of going into full erotic work. So it's one of those things that you want to kind of decide where you think the work might need to go and who has the boundaries that might be able to meet that. But I also think surrogate partner therapy needs to be looked at in a broader scale. And in this case, it doesn't mean that you need to be single as far as I'm concerned. I've started to do a lot of work with a lot of women specifically that have mother wounds and also sexual assault backgrounds. In having, I think, the level of training in the practitioner is higher in surrogate partner therapy, that you can still do a lot of that. I call it reparenting by committee, that it's in a book called Complex PTSD from Surviving to Thriving. by Pete Walker, another favorite of mine. And he talks about reparenting by committee and that the talk therapist oftentimes is the first person on that committee. And I think of ourselves as touch workers as another component of that committee, because it's different than being out in the regular world where people are coming in with their own stuff. I don't think anything's completely predictable, but I'm coming in with a really regulated nervous system. We're in a professional setting, so we know that the work is about you. And when you're in a real world relationship, it is not only about you, right? There's two people involved or more than two people involved. And so there's a little bit of this safety. I hate to say it's nothing is ever completely safe, but it's a safer container to start to work through those wounds so that we can kind of reconsolidate them and build our toolbox before we go out to work in the wild with our friends and family.
And to mingle with other people and mm-hmm. have those skills and have an opportunity to maybe practice them
yeah.
in a setting that's safe. Actually, a couple of things are coming up for me. My mom and I have talked about this recently, that it's a relationship that we've built where we are able to do that for each other and mm-hmm. create that safety to practice mm-hmm. the skills.
Mm-hmm.
And which is really cool because it happens to be my mom too. But not everybody has that safe space to practice the things.
Yeah.
And practice communicating, practice setting boundaries, mm-hmm. practice vocalizing your needs and all of those things like that are really important for relationships
mm-hmm.
and erotic sexual experiences as well.
Yeah. Our childhood, right? Like if we grew up with emotionally immature parents and we've been taught that our needs need to come last, that we earn love, we come into adulthood and it really fucks with our ability to be in healthy relationships. And so I've gone through this work myself. It's really interesting. I divorced and a year and a half later took this cuddle training just because it was available and thought, I'm a mom, I can cuddle. And the cuddle training that I took was through Cuddlist. And it's really about empowering clients and learning about boundaries and how to communicate effectively and is really built kind of in the background of something called the Wheel of Consent. And so while I was practicing holding space for clients, I was practicing the skill set that I did not come out of my childhood development with. And I certainly didn't come out of a really unhealthy marriage with. And so learning how, like, that it was okay to have wants, that it was okay to have bodily autonomy, that it was safe to say no to someone, like cuddle party, another great opportunity for people to practice these skills in a group setting. It's the same kind of thing. We're in there in a space to go, okay, let's identify what does it feel like when you feel like you're doing something that you don't really want to be doing? How can we build the muscle to help you start to extricate yourself from those situations? And what is it like to have someone celebrate that with you and say, thank you for taking care of yourself? There's a rewiring that happens. And I had to do that for myself. And I can't even put like a price tag on how cool it is to know that I'm part of somebody else getting closer to being able to have more healthy relating. I'm thinking of a client that like he'll say his life changed the day that we had our first session. I was like, tell me more. And he's like, he was like A+ student, went home and he learned about yeses and nos. And he's like, goes home and he comes back and he's like, my kid asked me to do this thing when I got home and I was busy doing something else. And I just said, no, I'm not a yes to doing that right now. Could you give me 20 minutes? And he goes, and the world didn't fall apart.
Mm.
But he always put himself last. And that's just a great way to get resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal. So you brought something up earlier that I want to talk about, and we're going to call this legit or bullshit. You said there's erotic touch. What does that look like with surrogate partner therapy? Like,
yeah.
What is the extent of the erotic touch? Does that include penetration potentially?
Mm-hmm. It depends on the practitioner. We all get to have our own boundaries. I have currently changed my boundaries around this to not go to partnered sex, whether it be oral or penetrative sex. And it's a complicated answer. I'm happy to dive into my reasoning behind it. But every client is different. I've done the full scope. I think my personal limits are like, I'm not going to have anal sex with a client because I don't see the therapeutic benefit of that, right? Most of the time when we've needed to go to erotic, it's because they were delayed sexual debut, right? Or late in life virgin, as we could call them. I think the virgin word is an interesting word.
Yeah. That.
So they haven't had their sexual debut. And I understand why that can be a really big hurdle for people if they're afraid to show up with a new partner and they've never done that thing. There's like a socially acceptable window of not knowing what you're doing, right? So I understand that. And I've gone through penetrative sex with clients with that. The reason I've started to change is, A, my sexuality has become way more apparent to me. And it's a lot of work to show up in a sexual space with a client. And the truth of the matter is I don't get paid enough to put that kind of energy forward. Surrogate partner therapy with clients is usually at least a year-long process. A, if I was charging what I want to charge in order to put that kind of energy forward, suddenly I wouldn't be falling under the this isn't prostitution laws, right? So my rate when I was on the East Coast was $200 an hour, no matter what I was doing in session with a client. It doesn't feel equitable to me. The energy output is so much different. I happen to identify in the asexual spectrum. I've just recently, as part of all of this, Michelle, at 47 years old, you're still figuring out yourself, right? I realized I don't experience sexual attraction. For me, I have sensual attraction. I crave being close to someone and maybe cuddling with them. You know, maybe it's pets and, you know, like I love touch. I want head scratches and all these things. I want closeness that way. And that will turn my body on. And we can talk about, you know, responsive desire. So like, I get to responsive desire because once I hit arousal, the responsive desire shows up and then I want to have sex. But that's not sexual attraction. That's sexual desire. Those are different things. And I did a consult with an asexual educator around this because I wanted to understand what I was kind of figuring out. And she was really great to help point me to understanding the difference between sexual attraction, being attracted towards a person, versus sexual desire, which is the desire to have sex. So when I combine that with my work, it gets really complicated.
Did you meet with
Aubrey Lancaster? Aubrey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. For those of you, Aubrey's actually been on the podcast before as well.
That's right.
So you can always go check out one of the past episodes about that to learn more about asexuality. But yeah, I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. And I like sex. And I think that's what's so interesting is coming out with this information, even in our sex positive, you know, we our colleagues, right? It's still such an understood identity or orientation that I still got the, oh, so you don't like sex. No, I do like sex. I just don't experience sexual attraction. And so, yeah, I've been playing with changing my boundaries around this work. I make the regular kind of comparison to like the garbage man. When gas prices started to spike, we all saw this energy surcharge hit our bills. Right. And I was finding myself contemplating not doing the work anymore because the energy exchange didn't feel equitable enough to me. And so it's not that I don't still do erotic work. I do. I just don't do it under surrogate partner therapy because of the guidelines around pricing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, energy is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And in the work that you do, if you don't show up in the right energy, it's going to come out in the practice.
And in my personal life.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's been interesting. Maybe this is my trauma showing up as a benefit to my work, but my previous marriage was really peppered with sexual coercion. I had a lot of sex out of obligation. So the idea of showing up for sex as part of my job is not a foreign concept to me. I'm doing it in full consent. It's different from in my marriage where it was out of like pressure, a partner who would pout, make life harder. So it became like, this is how I could make my household happier. Like, that's not the reason to have sex. And I didn't know coercion at the time. I just knew it didn't feel great. And it reminded me a lot of my parents' relationship. So it wasn't until I got out of that marriage that I even could retrospectively look back and go, wow, that was really fucked up. Right. And it's a complicated story. It's really hard to talk about because of my ex-husband and his, we don't agree on this topic. But I do know in my work now, I am a yes, but why am I a yes? I'm a yes because I enjoy helping people. I enjoy educating them, but it also is something that has there's a recovery period, an emotional recovery period, an energetic recovery period. And so people look at our work and they're like, oh, you make $200 an hour. And it's like, yeah, do you know how many clients I can see in a day? Do you know how many hours I can work in a day? It's not that I'm working anything close to 40 hours. It's not that I'm working anything close to 20 hours. I personally have a limit of 2 people a day that I would see. And that's in all of my work. It's all incredibly emotionally intense. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I love it. I love being part of people's growth process. And when we talk about the erotic component, I just couldn't figure out a way to keep offering surrogate partner therapy and feel good about having partnered sex as part of that offering. There's a lot of things I can say yes to for less, yeah. But that just felt like my limit.
In professional cuddling, mm-hmm. Is there erotic work there?
No. So here's the thing. I think people, when they think of cuddling, a lot of times it happens like as a post-coitus, mm-hmm. Like this is part of our aftercare. This is the pillow talk. And that's the fun part, right? When I think about some of my surrogate partner clients is you do the sex thing, right? And they're like, the connection afterwards, they're like, oh, this is my favorite part, right? Mm-hmm. And they can have that without the sex, but we don't realize that we can do that because we just haven't separated those two things. So yes, the cuddling is platonic. It doesn't mean arousal doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. In Cuddlist, we have a code of conduct that we both agree to. And that part of that code of conduct is that we are not going to chase arousal. So erections can show up. Mm-hmm. We're just not going to do anything about them. We're going to let them pass. We can change positions. We cannot change positions. It really just comes back to that. If anything here makes me uncomfortable, I'm going to do something to change it. So if an erection is making me uncomfortable or the client uncomfortable, we can change it. We can change positions. We can add a pillow. There's workarounds. And I think that's one of the number one questions when a male client or someone with a penis initially approaches the work, they have a real fear around what happens. We can't always control that. The funny thing is, I say, erections happen when we're relaxed. It would make total sense for an erection to show up in cuddle space because we're there to relax. So it's not erotic work. Now, do I bring cuddling into my erotic work? Absolutely. Yeah, but different modality.
Got it. It's interesting you say, you know, like erections, they show up. And as a vulva owner, like you don't see physically mm-hmm. when we are aroused mm-hmm. without touch generally or without being told and using mm-hmm. our words. And so there's that advantage and
yeah.
you're not going to know.
We're stealthy that way.
Yeah. You're not going to know if I'm aroused in that situation unless
you want somebody to know, right?
Exactly. Yeah. How are emotional and physical boundaries maintained in surrogate partner therapy?
Well, I think it's about ethics. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is part of the training of surrogate partner therapy. And a lot of us use the wheel of consent in our work. So the wheel of consent, for people that don't know, is kind of it's a practice. It's not something we live in 24 hours a day, but it is something that can be practiced. And it's really interesting to look at touch, and it can be used in lots of other areas besides touch. But it looks at, who is the touch for? Who is this in service to? Right. And I think as a professional, we have to remember that we're there in service to the client. And the interesting thing, this is one of the differences between cuddling and surrogate partner therapy. Cuddling is always client-led, the way that I'd practice it. So the client asks for something and I decide if I want it or not, right? In surrogate partner therapy, there comes a point where we've established enough safety and I trust the client's yes and no enough that I can offer them something. Because if I've never heard their no, I can't trust their yes. So if I came into a space with a client and we hadn't established that kind of foundational communication, I couldn't come in and say, I would like a 20-second hug. Would you do that for me? Client might say yes, but they might not want to say yes. And what does that do to fracture our relationship? Right? So it's keeping that in mind that I'm going to ask for things because it's in service to the client. I might say, I would like you to touch my vulva, right? I need to know that they are capable of saying yes or no to that request. And that is for me, right? So is it still in service to the client? Yes, because it's part of their skill set. So we have to have ethics around making sure that we are working for the client, not for us. Because you could, without remembering what is my job here, you could fall in love with a client, decide this is the person you were meant to be with. And that's not fair to the client. The client, even if they say that they're also in love with you and they want to run away together, our job is to push them out the nest so they can go generalize what they've learned with us out in the regular world. We're in a really interesting dynamic there that I can't see that it's fair for either person to move into a romantic relationship past that work.
How do you, like, you know, if the container is a year long, after the year, then what? Do you just drop them off and say good luck? Or how do you handle that?
Specifically for surrogate partner work. Okay, I want to say cuddling is kind of like hiring a massage therapist. It can be part of your self-care routine. There doesn't need to be an end date. There doesn't need to be goals. You can come in, at least with me, if you say, Michelle, I really want to work on my boundaries. My sister's coming into town. I have a really hard time telling her no. I got a big toolbox. I'm happy to bring that into the space, right? But when you're in surrogate partner therapy, there's a very clear goal. And one of the things I put in my contract is that at the end of our work, I want a 2-year no contact. They're still going to be working with their therapist. Our work ends, but their work is still there. They've got a grieving process to go through. They get to experience a breakup.
Wow.
Depending on how deeply we've connected, right? It's hard. It's hard for the client, but they've got the help of the therapist. For me, I had a recent client for 2 years. We were in erotic work for a year. This is one of those reasons I look back and I go, ooh, that was a lot to carry for a year. Because it's not just when I would see him, I would see him once a month. It was holding that space in between too, right? And I adored him. It wasn't like it was terrible work. He was a lovely person to spend time with, but it was still work. And when we ended, I cried for sure. Not because I was losing him, but because I wasn't going to get to see his journey. I'd watched him grow for 2 years. He was a different person by the time we got done working together. And I'm everybody's cheerleader. I want to know how they're doing. I want to support them. So one of the things we did is I connected him with another surrogate, a male surrogate, so that if he had some questions come up that maybe his therapist couldn't answer, that he would have another person that he could resource. I set him up as well as I could. You know, we talked about all sorts of, what are you going to do when you have your next relationship? Oh, you're already starting to talk to someone. That's great. How are you taking our work and integrating it? And he was working so hard to like bring the vulnerability that he experienced with me into this new kind of blossoming, curious situation that was happening before I left. And he had his therapist to keep working through the feelings that were coming up. I'm assuming feelings that were coming up when our work ended. And I have the therapist to some extent that I could turn to. And it's not that I've never been like, so how's he doing? I want an update that's not directly from the client because I'm invested.
Yeah.
I'm invested.
And I feel like that would just be so challenging because you do build a relationship. This isn't something where, yes, it's work. Mm-hmm. But when you build that level of intimacy with somebody, it's hard to just cut it off.
It's amazing work. I love that I have these incredibly different relationships with every client. Like there's not two clients that ever present the same, that our time together is ever the same. I have like the capacity to just connect and connect and connect. And I also have the capacity to let go. And I think that is something that if we don't have that, we need to work on it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I started in cuddling, the first lesson that was really drove into me was the money is really important, Michelle. Because, you know, we want to love on people. And why should we have to be paid for this? And you know, we live in capitalism and I have to pay my rent. If I wasn't, people will say, why do I have to pay for affection? And I'm like, I have to get paid or I'd have to do a different job. And I happen to be really good at this. And I somehow have come through life with a really great nervous system. I don't understand exactly how that happened, but it's my favorite compliment. And I think it's something for people to really tackle that there's a benefit to paying for a professional.
Yeah.
The session is for them. If you show up, anybody can be a cuddler, right? Anybody can take money to cuddle. If you go through a place that has a reputable training and there are multiple trainings out there, they understand that it's not for them. They're not coming in with their own needs to be taken care of. They're doing those things outside of the work, right? You pay for a level of professionalism. You pay for confidentiality. You pay for like reliability, right? There's things like, just like you pay your hairdresser and you pay your massage therapist and, you know, all these different services that we have in our life, having a professional helps that container that you need to take money for this, Michelle, because I know $150 an hour is what I charge for any work that I do with my clothes on. I know when that session starts and when it stops. It's very clear based on the money exchange. And I think that helps everybody involved. I think it helps. I had to learn the lesson of, no, Michelle, you really shouldn't be friends with your clients. Like I had to go through that myself and learn that boundary. But that's part of like keeping everything above board and ethical. It really is.
Yeah. So you mentioned there are some trainings. Mm-hmm. If somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh, you know, I might be interested in doing some of this work. Mm-hmm. What are the resources? Where would you send them? Or where would you send them to find somebody who is either a professional cuddler or a surrogate partner?
Yeah. I'll start with the cuddling because it's like the lowest barrier to entry. And I think they both work together so well. When I meet new surrogate partners, I always suggest that they add a cuddle training to their modalities. And when I talk about my work as a surrogate partner to professional cuddlers, they start to see the overlap and they're like, oh, maybe I would like to do that work. And especially now that I've started talking about different boundaries and being able to have, if you don't want to have erotic contact with your clients, that's okay. You can still do this work, right? And so to start in the cuddle world, I personally am with Cuddlist.com. I've been with them since the beginning. I happen to be their director of training at this point in my life, which is a huge honor.
Congrats.
I'm super stoked. Cuddlist.com, great option. I really think that they're really clinically minded because of the empowering of the client. I think it works really well with people that have trauma because you're less likely to go in the weeds if the client is really kind of helping propel the session. It's not great for everyone because if you can't even get started with being able to articulate what you might like, there's coaching that can be involved. But if you have a really complicated case, maybe that's not the place to start, right? I think seeking out a surrogate partner is a better plan. But if you're looking to try cuddling or be a cuddler, Cuddlist.com is great. Cuddle Sanctuary, another great organization that is based out of LA, and they do trainings and they also have a directory of practitioners that have been trained by them. I think there's some other ones out there, but those are the two that I think in my head are like the top of the list. For surrogate partner work, there's a newer organization called Surrogate Partner Collective that I am really, really excited about. It's a collective of surrogate partners. They offer training and they can be a resource to find a surrogate partner, but their first training is happening right now. And it's kind of been this, I don't know if crowdsource is the right word, but they're bringing in all of these surrogate partners that have been trained by lots of different places. There's only a few different places to get trained, but we all have a different experience in surrogate partner. therapy, we all have a different grouping of trainings. We come to it differently. I got to teach a class on how to run a successful business, right? Like we've got different surrogates teaching different portions of the training. So I think it's such a lovely cornucopia of information. And they're in the middle of their first cohort. And I heard the other day that they actually have enough people to do like two more trainings right away if they want. Wow. I don't know how they're going to pace those out. Traditionally, the International Professional Surrogate Partner Association, IPSA, which is based up in the LA area, they've been the longest group around for training. They are still an option, though I'm kind of really excited about the Surrogate Partner Collective. I personally trained with a different organization and I didn't find the training super great, so I don't tend to talk about them as an option. But the beauty of it is we have this really rich community and I got to kind of fill in the gaps with really great mentors. So not all is lost if you end up in a situation that you don't feel like you got everything that you really need, because we have this robust community. You've kind of entered into part of that community, not directly all surrogate partners, but a wide variety of intimacy professionals. But we also have our little niche of surrogate partner practitioners that we get to lean on. Mm-hmm. And it's so like more brains are better than one, right?
Absolutely. I could say a lot about this because in business, community is so important. Mm-hmm. In life, community is so important. And when you can find people who maybe go through similar things, mm-hmm. who have similar experiences, and you can just get feedback from, it's so helpful.
Yeah. As far as finding a surrogate, if you're working with a talk therapist already, I think the general preference is to have your talk therapist reach out to one of us. If you do a Google search of your area, you might be lucky enough to have a surrogate partner in your area. It's a really small field. There are not a lot of us. I think I heard in the most recent kind of polling of numbers, there might be 200 of us in the country.
Wow.
It's not big. And I don't even know that half of them are practicing. So, you know, it's a privilege. If you can afford and if there's travel involved, it really starts to add up. And so it's unfortunate that it's not more readily available. And of course, insurance doesn't cover it. And, you know, those kinds of things. But if you have a talk therapist, having your talk therapist reach out to a surrogate partner is probably the preferred way. I think it's always good to get referrals. So having your therapist be able to reach out to their network and say, has anybody worked with a surrogate partner? ASEC, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, those kinds of questions pop up in that community a lot because a lot of times the therapists that we're working with are sex therapists. So Google is our friend. And also be careful, right? We have to interview these people. That's your cuddler, your surrogate, your Reiki. We have to be mindful consumers. And I know that can be really daunting and overwhelming because we don't know what we don't know. But I think of it this way, like one of the questions I think would be really great is like, so do you have colleagues that you meet with regularly? You know what I mean? Because if you're still working on an island at this point with the way the internet is, I would take that as a red flag.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Really, really good question. Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation and we could talk for hours on all of the good stuff. I would love to kind of wrap this up with, how do you define pleasure?
I define it outside of sex, mm-hmm. right? I think that's one of my pet peeves is when people automatically think sexual pleasure or automatically think sexual intimacy, right? Pleasure isn't anything that makes you want more of it, right? Like it might be pleasurable to have your back scratched. You can also take that to a place of displeasure, right? It's finding that sweet spot where you want more of it. That's what I think of. And I think of it around any of our senses, right? We could have a pleasurable smell, a pleasurable taste, like give me a good piece of chocolate, right?
Yes.
Pleasure and touch, I think feels more obvious. Like what is your favorite kind of touch? There's pleasure in the air touch that just gently like makes my skin just come alive, right? I think of like one of my favorite views of like standing. I revisited the Grand Canyon a couple of years ago. I went as a kid and to see it again as an adult and just being struck by the magnificence of it. I think of that as being pleasurable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a sunset here. We're in San Diego, right?
That's my thing.
That's pleasure. Yeah.
I agree that pleasure so often is localized to sex, but really mm-hmm. it has nothing to do with sexual connection. Like, yes, sure, maybe. but pleasure is in all of our daily life and we can incorporate it in so many ways outside of the bedroom.
Well, I think about if we can circle back to responsive desire real quick for the quick tip is like, rather than focus on what can I do sexually with you, if you're not there yet, pull it back farther and say, what would feel good to you right now? And it might start with a foot rub, right? And then, oh, well, that feels really good. Maybe I would really like soft caresses, like fingertip caresses over my backside. Oh, well, that's feeling even better. Well, now I'm starting to get like the juices are flowing and I'm starting to, my thought process is starting to think, well, if that feels good, right? If we can take the pressure and just follow the pleasure.
Follow the pleasure. I love that.
That's good.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Michelle, and sharing all of your knowledge and wisdom with us. So thank you.
Thanks for asking such great questions.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.